Yeah, man.
So we back in the club with our bodies rocking from side to side, side, side to side. Thank God the week is done. I feel like a zombie gone back to life, back, back to life. Hands up, yeah, suddenly we all got our hands up. Control of my body. Ain't I seen you before? I think I remember those eyes, 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 eyes. 'Cause baby, tonight the DJ gonna swing your love again.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balaji, and it's great to have you here with us. Before we get into the usual spiel of things, I want to apologize because we didn't do the two shows that we said we were going to try to do, two per week. We've been trying to focus on doing more shows this year, and we got derailed in the first week of the year. My youngest daughter, my youngest child, she has been ill the last few days, and there's been snow closings and ice closings, which are not typical here in the D.C. area. And we've had a bunch of those days in a row, basically, in the last week. So really have not been able to do much in the way of productivity for GNN, and certainly haven't been able to sit down and do this podcast. So I apologize for that. We are still trying to meet our goals for the year. Unfortunately, we're just too behind. So we owe you two shows somewhere in there over the course of the year. Certainly we'll get to them during the major championships. But you can get a hold of me, Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com by email. You can get a hold of me on Twitter @RyanBalaji. You can find Golf News Net on your favorite social media service @GolfNewsNet. You can download our apps for Roku and Amazon Fire TV. And we have a whole lot of stuff to tell you about at the start of the show that we didn't have finalized for our first show of the year, and wanted to kind of run down a little bit of it with you. Some of it's going to be infomercially, some of it will not be, but all of it is cool stuff that we are either partnering with someone or we're doing something, and we wanted to kind of give you an update on it. There's an update, full update on the website, golfnewsnet.com, but just wanted to kind of outline some things and thank some sponsors, thank some people who we're working with this year. So first, we wanted to tell you, we've been planning about this for well over a year at this point. We had conceived this last year in 2017, the idea of an audience trip between myself and Mitch and Darren and Jay Flemma and so many of our other great contributors at Golf News Net. We've built relationships with all of you, either as a podcast listener, a video watcher, a social media follower, website reader, whatever, over the past 3-4 years, this being our fourth year. And I want to get together with people. I love going to play golf. I have a couple of different buddies trips I do each year, and it is some of my favorite weeks of the year. And I wanted to be able to put something together with you guys and go do something fun. So we have put together our first audience trip. There will probably be a second, but we don't have the details on that yet. But the first is going to be to the World Amateur Handicap Championship in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this August. It's the 27th through the 31st, are the 5 dates of the trip. And what the Myrtle Beach World Am, as it's more commonly known, is the biggest single golf tournament involving thousands and thousands of recreational golfers like you and me. And you get grouped into flights of about 48 people based on your age and skill level. And you go play 4 rounds of golf, 72 holes of net golf based on your handicap and in the range you get put in. And there are prizes for the winners. There is potentially a 6th round. Because we have 4 rounds of 72 holes of the championship, a round the day before, that's complimentary. And then if you finish high enough in your flight, you actually get a 6th round the next day. So September 1st, you could have a 6th round of golf in Myrtle Beach. There are different courses each day. As you know, there are some 60 golf courses in the Myrtle Beach area, and I've played a number of them. I love going down to Myrtle Beach every year. I usually do in the fall. Sometimes I've done it in the summer. Actually going to do it twice. Well, really 3 times this year. I'm doing one of the family vacation in August. Going to come right back for the World Am, and then probably back in October for the fall. It's one of my favorite parts of the world because there's so much great golf variety. The weather is always great. And I've been to the World Am in the past. and have really enjoyed myself. Not competed, but spent some time with my friends at the world's largest 19th hole, which is the Myrtle Beach Convention Center. They take it over. It's open bar, heavy hors d'oeuvres. A lot of people that I know and love will be there, so we'll get to interact with them. Mitch Lawrence will be there. His wife Ava Lawrence will be there, who is the greatest, one of the greatest pool players of all time, greatest women's billiards player of all time, hands down. She's in the Hall of Fame, which is awesome. And then each night we're going to have some fun after the 19th hole in Myrtle Beach. Find places to go check out, either drink beer, have a good dinner, play some mini golf, any or all of the above. We'll have a package on our website. It'll be at thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam, WORLDAM, and you can see all the details there. But basically, for about $1,000, you're going to get an awesome value. You're going to get at least 5 rounds of golf, maybe 6, all that stuff from the 19th hole. You get a player package. A welcome package is worth like $300. It's really a remarkable bargain. So we've teamed up with the folks at the World Am to put that together, and then all the stuff that we're going to do, which will be fun as well. So I'm excited about that. Next, I want to tell you about ShipStix. We have partnered with them early on this year for a campaign that will hopefully introduce you to ShipStix. If you haven't heard of them already, how you have not, I do not know. But if you haven't, we'll introduce you to ShipStix and how easy it is to use their service, their white glove pickup and delivery service from wherever you are to wherever you need your clubs in a reasonable time frame, using the best carriers, either FedEx, you know, FedEx, DHL, those types of carriers. And you get to see how your bag is moving throughout the entire process from when they pick it up to where it's going. And that saves you all the time and annoyance of having to take your bag with you to the airport, get it on the flight, probably pay a lot of money for it, pick it up, put it in your car, or get it to your hotel, then get it to your destination. It's an annoyance. And so we really like what ShipStix has done. We've supported what they've done, and they have been awesome to support us. And they're offering a 20% discount on your purchase when you make one, going to ShipStix.com/GNN. Very simple to remember. ShipStix.com/GNN. You get 20% off. You just have to go there, claim your discount, and then you can use that by the end of March. So if you're using some kind of, you're having some kind of golf vacation in the winter months, which you should, if you haven't one, use ShipStix. Save that 20%. You usually, if you plan out your trip appropriately, you're going to spend under $100 anyway to have that shipping done. That's pretty much what you spend, if not more, on an airline. So you're going to get 20% off of that, and you don't have to drag all your clubs to the airport to and from and all that annoyance. Check them out, ShipStix.com/GNN, for that 20% off. And actually, if you head over to our website as well, we're giving away a free round trip through ShipStix. All you have to do is sign up for our email list. Just head over to golfnewsnet.com for that. And finally, want to tell you again about 2-Under. 2-Under makes the greatest performance underwear in golf. And that's right, it's made for golfers. But they also make incredible performance products for athletes and normal human beings who aren't being athletic that day. It's comfortable, it fits right, it breathes, it takes moisture away from the places where you don't want it. And it makes sure that you have a great experience, whether you're in the gym, walking on the course, lugging a heavy bag, riding along, feeling the pressure with 2 holes to go, 1 up with 2 to go, or 2 down with 2 to go, trying to salvage that money on the press. Whatever situation that you're in, 2-Under has a product for you to make you feel more comfortable and better on the golf course and pretty much anywhere where you are. So they're offering an awesome discount as well for you. If you go over to 2under.com, they will give you 20% off whatever you buy if you use GNN20, GNN20, at checkout. That promo code is available for every one of your orders. That's fantastic news. So head over to 2under, the number 2UNDR.com, and check all of that out. Whew, that was a lot of stuff. I realize we just spent 9 minutes telling you about all the awesome things we're putting together and that we've put together so far. We will try to not make it 9 minutes worth of stuff each and every week, but we're so excited about all of those things. More coming as well that we'll announce in the coming weeks, either on our website or through this podcast. And we're just trying to save you money. I'm trying to make sure you enjoy golf more and save money doing it. And to that end, you can also sign up for GNN Plus. If you head over to our website, golfnewsnet.com, and sign up for GNN Plus, it's as little as $8 a year for 3 years, $9 a year for 2 years, $10 a year for a single year. You're going to save at least that amount of money back, if not more so. And that depends on what you buy. But basically, yeah, you're going to save at least five times that amount of money based on the discounts that we have available to you. And no matter what, we're going to give you a $10 gift card to our shop, gnnstore.com. You can find the store on our website too. So at a minimum, you're going to get from us exactly what you put back in terms of cost. And you get that $10 gift card every single year. So please use it and check out our website, golfnewsnet.com. Sign up for GNN Plus. We have got lots of new original content coming this year. It's finally a point of emphasis for us. Not just fantasy golf. It's all kinds of stuff that you're not going to find anywhere else. So please head over to thegolfnewsnet.com and check out all of those sponsors opportunities as well, GNN Plus. Okay, so let's talk Tournament of Champions. First, let's talk Dustin Johnson's 432-yard and 6-inch drive on the 12th hole in the final round. That was the craziest thing I may have ever seen in golf. That a 433-yard hole was almost aced. That's still boggles my mind thinking about that. And now, my wife was a little bit of a wet blanket. I was trying to explain it to her, showed her the replay. And she plays golf. I mean, she understands what's going on. She's like, you know how lucky that was, right? You know that was lucky. You know that he didn't drive the green. He didn't stick it hole high and it just didn't go in. It wasn't like a par three that lipped out for an ace. He had to get lucky to get there. And of course he did. He had to hit the proper side of the fairway. Left side had to bounce properly toward the hole. And then once it got on the green, it just landed in the right place and started tracking toward the hole. I get all of those things. But even if you take away the final, let's say, 60 yards of that drive, 50, 60 yards of that drive, what he still accomplished with that one tee shot was incredible. He basically hit a 370 to 380-yard rope exactly where it needed to be on the left side of the fairway. And that's why when he hit the tee shot, if you haven't seen the replay or if you haven't heard his commentary as he's hitting the shot, he says that could be on. I think that can be on. He's thinking he's driven a 432-yard hole. Even if he gets to the front, it's still 412. That's pretty ridiculous. So he thinks he's got it. It was downwind, downhill. I get it. But come on. None of us have that shot. No one has that shot. At least that I know of. I mean, I'm probably Tony Finau has it or Patrick Rogers. I don't know. Maybe like five guys on the PGA Tour might have that shot. And you still have to hit it perfectly. And that was the more remarkable part to me, is that Dustin Johnson hit a perfect drive to the proper position on the fairway, actually just off the fairway, but about a foot, and it bounced in the right spot because he knew the camber of the hole. It was perfect. Everything else after that is kind of luck. But that he pulled that off and then got himself into a position to make a tap-in eagle on a par four is just mind-boggling. He drove three greens on Sunday, three of them in the final round. His average par four approach shot length for the entire week was 92 yards. That's, based on what I saw from him in the Kingdom at TaylorMade, that's basically what he's going to hit a lob wedge every time. That's a max lob wedge for him. 64-degree lob wedge. 93 yards. That's it. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, if we could all play golf from the dead middle of the fairway or where in the fairway you needed to be and could hit a lob wedge into every green, you know what? We could probably manage to break par at least. The game is easy for him because of his athleticism and distance and the work that he's put in to become such a great just sniper of a wedge player. And it puts him in position to make golf look really easy. One of the statistics I thought, other than the two we've just talked about, that was most telling about his tournament performance and what he's capable of doing, I think it came from Golf Channel, almost certain it did, from Justin Ray, who's great over on their team. He said Dustin Johnson only made three putts longer than 9 feet all week. And he won by a lot. So you're telling me he was and I realize it's a par 73 golf course. I got that. Even if you took away, if you kind of turned one of the holes into a par 4 that's a 5 or something like that, and I don't think you could actually do that with the length of the par 5s there, but nonetheless, if you did that, made a par 72, he still shot 20 under par, and that's 5 under a day, and he did that, making 3 putts longer than 9 feet all week, which means he was driving greens, he was hitting wedges close, he was hitting whatever full shots he had to hit close, he was dominating the golf course. He never put himself in a position, really, to screw up, and when he did, normally got up and down. The ones I think of reviewing back on the week that he didn't accomplish getting up and down were they took a funky hop, the one he didn't expect when he hit the shot. Think about a bunker shot, one chip shot. We all make mistakes. No one's going to have a perfect week. But the way that he performed from start to finish and then close out the week with his best round was incredible. He had it done by the turn. And I don't know if he ever gets motivated by what other people say about him. He doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. He seems pretty much self-motivated, just like any great athlete probably is. Except Michael Jordan, who loves a good slight. But I got the sense that he might have been slightly motivated by what happened in China, even though he kind of said, oh, I don't remember that. He remembers. He remembers letting a 6-shot, 54-hole lead go. And really quickly let it go to Justin Rose. Gave that tournament away. And I'm sure he not as crying at night about it, but he's angry that he let that go. That should have been his. He should have won by 6 or 8 the way he played the first 54 holes. And then on the Golf Channel side of things, I don't know if anyone's really motivated to stick it to Brandel Chamblee or not. I probably don't have time to care about that a whole lot. If you're really good, I mean, if you're not good and sitting at home on weekends, maybe you got time to care about what Brandel says. But for the guys that are the best, they're playing late in the day. So they don't get to see Brandel's hot takes. But Brandel came out, I'm pretty sure it was Saturday, and said, well, you know, Dustin's got something to prove. He's never run away from the field, you know, one big in a golf tournament. I mean, that's kind of dumb. I mean, to me, that's really dumb to say that, because I don't think the greats had to have blowouts. I mean, they did. Tiger had lots of blowouts. But you know how many majors Jack won by, like, 1 or 2 shots? Most of them. Almost all of them were by 1 or 2 shots. They weren't blowouts. Tiger was the most dominant golfer we've ever seen for any stretch of time longer than 6 months. He was dominant for years, winning tournaments by 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, whatever. And any kind of stroke number he won by, he felt comfortable stomping on throats. But more often than not, that's not how it works. Not for any of the greats. You win close ones. You get the occasional blowout. It's cool, whatever. But if you blow everyone out, what does that tell people? That's different from a one-shot win. I don't know. I don't think it really does. But if, for some reason, that got under Dustin Johnson's skin, he certainly just stuck that right to Brandel, who then turned right around after Dustin Johnson won the golf tournament and said, that drive on 12 was the greatest shot I've ever seen. No, it wasn't. It's not the greatest shot you've ever seen. Maybe one of your favorite shots you've ever seen, which I think was actually the premise of his list, shots he enjoyed the most. But even then, I think you'd be hard to press him to really rank that at number one if you thought about what was happening with a little bit more time from when he sent that tweet that everyone was like, you're stupid, to today. I don't think it would rank number one today. And I don't think it should ever rank number one on anyone's list. But it is up there with one of the coolest shots you've ever seen, right? I mean, it's got to be up there. If it's not in the top, let's say, in the top 20 shots you've ever seen a professional hit. Maybe. I think I could probably name others that would fit, but it is pretty remarkable to see a guy hit one 432 and 6 inches tracking into the hole. We still only have one hole-in-one on a par 4 in PGA Tour history. That belongs to Andrew McGee, who aced the 332-yard par 4 17th at TPC Scottsdale in the 2001 Phoenix Open. And really, that should not have counted. I know it counts under the rules of golf because it went in the hole, but it shouldn't have counted because it actually hit a player's golf club putter that was on the green. There was a group on the green when he hit. I don't think he was expecting to really get up there, but got the right bounce, went off a putter or a bag, and went in the hole. So, a little bit different than what you would imagine would have the reaction would have been like to Dustin Johnson putting the ball in the hole on, you know, without some kind of interference from an artificial thing. But that's the only one that remains. The other one that it's a hole in three is Aaron Baddeley a few years ago at the Valero Texas Open. He pumped his tee shot, his initial first tee shot, into the gunk on the left, and then with his third shot, so he re-teed, he holed out. So he has the three, but he still aced a par four with two penalty strokes. So I guess, so both of those things are kind of obviously marred, one by the obvious score issue, one by the circumstances by which it got to the hole. So I think it's still the greatest par four drive in PGA Tour history. I'll give it that. I think you have to give it that. The greatest par four drive in PGA Tour history. But other than that, I don't think you could. I think you could find shots that you liked more or were more important under the circumstances. But I would think it's probably in the top 20 to 30 shots ever hit on the PGA Tour. And hopefully you got to see it. If you did get to see it live, I hope you watch it three more times. It's pretty remarkable. I mean, I think about the best drives I've ever hit, and a lot of them, they were great because they took on something and I pulled it off. And whether that was water or a big hazard or a dog leg or, you know, whatever it is. But they landed in the right spot. They landed exactly where I thought they were going to land and then did exactly what I thought they were going to do. And that's pretty much what happened with Dustin Johnson. So just an incredible shot to watch. And then to see him run away from guys like John Rahm, who has quickly figured out how to just be a top five machine, is amazing. I think Rahm learned something probably seeing what it's like to be on the second place end of an ass kicking, and probably wants to do that himself to the field someday. So I hope so. And I hope he continues to live up to what he's done in the last 12 months. I mean, he went from what, 561 in the world when he turned pro to he's in the top four in the world. That's just amazing. He's got a little bit of work ahead of him this year because he's got to maintain a lot of those points, but he can also get closer because he still doesn't have two full years under his belt. So he has until basically the U.S. Open to collect points that won't be replacing other better points, if that makes sense. So it'll be really interesting to see how he does and whether he can even approach number one in the world. And the potential there, I mean, he has to do some crazy things to catch Dustin Johnson at this point. But if he got there somehow, went on a run, won three or four tournaments, something like that in a quick stretch, he might be able to get close. And then what do you say about that? I don't know. But that's another interesting development to watch as well. All right, let's take a break. And before we get to the second segment, we want to tell you again about our friends at Health IQ. Health IQ can save you a lot of money on your life insurance, between 4 and 33%. And they do this because they use science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like you. If you're a golfer that walks, or you're a runner, or cyclist, strength trainer, even if you're a vegan, if you belong to a gym and you can prove it, you can get yourself a nice discount on life insurance. Health IQ can save up to 33% on those rates because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are considered inactive. So stay active. It's just like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver. Working with Health IQ can save you money on your life insurance because you live a health-conscious lifestyle. 70% of the exclusive rate clients get approved to the top rate class if they qualify. And you're working with high-quality life insurers. All of these people have over $5 billion in life insurance coverage in action right now. And as someone who has in a previous portion of my life worked in life insurance or worked with a life insurer at John Hancock and others, there's a lot of money to be saved in life insurance if you can demonstrate that you're in good health and you're maintaining your health. So Health IQ is a great product. And if you're in the market for life insurance, you should check them out to see if you qualify. If you're not in the market for life insurance, you should still check them out to see if you qualify. Life insurance, especially term life insurance, can be a great product that is a great protection point for you and your family if something unfortunate happens to you. So see if you qualify. Get your free quote today at healthiq.com/19. Again, healthiq.com/19 to see if you qualify and to learn more. All right, let's check in with the second half of the show, which is a little bit oriented toward the golf business itself. So we're going to the PGA Merchandise Show in a couple of weeks. I think I've gone for way too many years now. I skipped a few years in there. I think when I was with Back Night, I was there with Back Night Network one time. I was there with NBC Sports. I mean, I skipped a couple of years in there somewhere, but I've gone most years for the last decade. And the show has changed, I would say, not dramatically, but it has seen ebb and flow. You know, kind of the beginning of the Great Recession in 2008, that 09 show was, really the 08 show I did not go to, but the 09 show was kind of one where a lot of people wanted to show in the industry that, hey, we're up off the mat, golf is here for business, we're going to get together, we're going to try and feel good about what's going on in our industry, even though there were a lot of really bad things happening. Golf courses were closing, they're still closing. A lot of people were shedding the game because they just didn't have the money in their pocket to play anymore. You know, the 5 million people that the sport kind of picked up coincidentally during the great years in the 90s and early 2000s, they went away pretty quickly. And among those first were women. Golf picked up about 3 million women in that time frame, started to play the game, and they're among the first to walk away when money got tougher for a lot of people. So that was kind of the attitude in 08, not really, you know, kind of 08, 09 certainly, because that was really the first year where the recession had hardly hit, or had hit hard, I mean. And since then, there was kind of that peak point. It was like, okay, we're back for a couple years. We believe in this. We need to show solidarity. And then it's kind of changed a little bit over the recent years. Some companies have gone away. Obviously, Nike Golf's different than the way they used to be. Bridgestone Golf doesn't attend the show. Mizuno looks a little bit different in terms of their presence. TaylorMade and Adidas have now split, so it'll be their first show is completely separate entities. That'll be interesting to see. And there's kind of been this, I won't say lore, but attempt to bring in smaller companies that can get exposure in the industry by being at this show, massive show of people in Orlando. And it's always kind of a weird thing for media to cover because there are potential unveils there, but in recent years you find out about most equipment, the major equipment releases for the year from the big equipment manufacturers ahead of time. You might find out some things during the show, but by and large the public knows because for a lot of reasons. One, there's less media than there used to be, so there's less reason to wait to tell the media about it because you could just disseminate the message yourself on your own social media channels. And the media that do know about it, they're obviously not as many of them, but most of them can be supplied with the same information that they're going to tell everybody anyway, so why tell us? And there's a proliferation as well of folks who do equipment reviews and vlogs along those lines, so they demonstrate the equipment on video, on your whatever device you're watching them on. You don't need for most written media to tell you what's going on. We've either told you already by the time the show rolls around, or they've got their own channels to do it. So it's a little bit different, but it is a really good networking event. The thing that I'm interested in talking about and also hearing about from you is how golfers find out about equipment, how they find out about new products. Because I get the sense over the years we've increased the amount of golf equipment content that we've done at the site, either written or video. We're going to do a golf equipment podcast this year. There really is none. We're going to try and do one. It's going to be, I think, video focused. We're still figuring that out. But I get the sense that a lot of people who play golf are not gearheads. You know, they say there's anywhere from 24 to 25 million Americans who play golf. Most of them are casual golfers. You got the 80-20 rule, right? You've got 80% of people play a handful of rounds a year, maybe. You know, some might go to Topgolf for fun. A lot of them go to the range just to work on their game. They might not get to play a whole lot. Some of them might play 9 holes here and there that add up to rounds, but they're not whole rounds at a time. And then there's kind of that 20% of hardcore golfers. They're people who love to play. They try to play every weekend or when they can. It's an avid hobby for them. It's not just something you do casually. And those are people probably most likely in tune with the latest golf equipment. You would imagine the casual person who doesn't play that often probably is not sitting on their computer waiting for embargoes to be released so they can find out about the next Callaway driver or what's coming from TaylorMade or what latest Scotty Cameron putter is going to hit the market. You know, all that stuff. They're not doing that. So you're talking to a small group of people. So I think most golfers don't find out about new equipment from the media, maybe not even from the companies themselves. They might find out about new equipment from the percentage of gearhead buddies that they have. You know, if you play with people who have a new set of clubs every year, you're naturally going to ask them about what they purchase. I mean, it's just you're there for 4 hours with them. I mean, you got to have a conversation about something. And so I think that's how a lot of this gets disseminated. And I think that's part of the reason why companies at the equipment level are kind of changing the way that they approach media, approach covering themselves, talking about themselves, because if they can break through the noise of all the other stuff that's going on and all of their competitors' messaging and connect with you directly, then you're more likely to be interested in them, even if you aren't a gearhead to begin with. Maybe they can convert you. Maybe they can make you a lifer for the equipment purchases that you do make to join their company and be loyal to them. But I think about it as a consumer, even though I have not probably paid for golf equipment in a long time, and I don't mean that to boast. I mean that as just I get stuff here and there, and I play it because most of it's really good. So I play it. But I have friends who I play with frequently or even infrequently, and they'll ask me about new equipment, and I'll kind of explain to them new pieces of technology and things, or even like cool gloves or bags or stuff that I find really interesting as a consumer. And not do they always buy it, but sometimes they do. And I think that I'm making them aware as a golfer that has the equipment more than a guy who's in the media. And I think even if I didn't know all the talking points, didn't know all the features and specs of a lot of these things, I still think I would be a more convincing salesman as a golfer than as a member of the golf media. And I wonder if that's true for you. I mean, I don't, obviously, we're not having a two-way conversation all the time, most of us. But I'm curious as if you're a golfer, not if you're a PGA Tour fan, but if you're a golfer, how do you decide to buy new equipment? I mean, is it, do you go to a site like Ours or GolfWRX or MyGolfSpy or someone like that and just keep up on what's out there? Do you just go to a golf store and be like, hey, man, I need a new driver. What do you got? Is that how it works? Do you go to demo days? Do you have a brand that you're particularly loyal to? I mean, as someone who last really bought golf equipment in the early 2000s, I would think, here's how I would do it. I would go and check out stuff online, probably, if I were just buying new equipment. I'd be like, all right, so what's out there from the big companies? And then kind of get a sense of knowing what my game is, maybe what I want to spend, who I could look toward. Then go to a golf shop, either a brick and mortar or a driving range with a pro shop attached, or a country club with a pro shop, if I belong to one, and say, hey, here's what I'm kind of looking for. Can you steer me in the right direction? And get fit. And then go through the process, see the club that performed with me best and order it and be done with it. And I wonder if that's what other people do. Because the folks at MyGolfSpy do annual testing every year, their most wanted list. And they test based on off-the-rack spec. So whatever you could get off the rack, whatever is the standard, that's what they test on. And there was an interesting conversation between the folks at Callaway Golf, Harry Arnett, who's their head of marketing, and a couple of their writers at MyGolfSpy, about why Callaway chose not to participate in MyGolfSpy's testing. TaylorMade didn't, PXG doesn't. And Callaway's objection was that they wouldn't want tested their stock equipment because that isn't a proper fit, not necessarily a proper fit for every golfer. And so they want to make sure that any testing that's done on their equipment is done per golfer. You get fitted by a Callaway certified fitter and you go through that process and then you see how that equipment performs for you. The folks at MyGolfSpy disagree and think, okay, well, they actually disagreed in terms of their testing, but they said, okay, well, we would want to get certified then. We'll go through the fitting process. And Callaway said, no, they have their reasons for that. I didn't really read all of that, but that's kind of what the gist was. And now the end result is going to be Callaway doesn't get included in the testing, and MyGolfSpy kind of talks about them not being a part of it. Does that malign Callaway or TaylorMade or PXG as companies because they won't participate in this testing? Do you look to that? Or as a golf consumer, do you just go find what works for you and get fitted for it? Or go find what you kind of want to buy and get fitted for it? Because I think that's probably what I would do. I would probably go find a piece of equipment that interested me and go get fit for it. And I'm not even sure I would go all that deep in different types of brands. You know, unless I, you know, now knowing who I am as a golfer and having worked in the industry that everyone makes really good equipment, I would. But if I were just somebody off the street that was a, you know, regular golfer that bought equipment not every year, but maybe every few years, maybe every 5 years. 5 years is more the common purchase period, but that's what I would go do. And then, you know, whatever, everybody else's numbers be damned. I mean, whatever shows up on the monitor for me is what it shows up for me. Let's go. Let's see what happens. Because I'll relate this back to TaylorMade's new products. So the M3 and M4, they held an event out in Carlsbad, California, their headquarters, part of their annual kind of get together for media, and they took us through a 45-minute fitting of their new drivers. So they had a bunch of different head types. You have M3 and M4. You have M3 440. You have the M4 D type. So you basically had four different driver heads to choose from. And obviously I started with M3 and M4, the standard heads, kind of like I did last year actually, and went through some different shaft choices, got some different numbers, and I kind of said, you know, I played the 440 last year in the M1 and have had one of the best driving years of my life. Let's try the M3 440. And sure enough, I went ahead and found a driver that works for me. It's just as good, you know, in terms of center face hits as the M1 440. It's better in terms of those duck hooks and pulls that I have a tendency to do. And it kind of straightens out the unintentional cuts that I hit. So the intentional cut that I hit in the middle of the face is going to still cut how I want. So it's interesting because I kind of took the fitting in a direction because I knew something about myself that I learned from a previous fitting. But for the average golfer, they might not know that. They might not know, hey, I hit a smaller head actually better, works for me better. Or I know this kind of shaft works for me a little bit better. And I bring all of that back to this point that if you're a golf equipment consumer, if you're someone who buys golf equipment, plays golf, buys golf equipment, you should get fit for every piece of equipment. Every one of them. Your driver, your fairway woods, your hybrids, your irons, your wedges, your putter. Putter fitting is kind of hard to do, but your putter, at least in some fashion, certainly your golf ball, and go through all of those motions. It's a worthwhile investment. Even if it costs you money, it's a worthwhile investment to know that about yourself. Because if you know who you are, you know you're not dramatically changing your game in the next period between when you buy this piece of equipment and the next, then this is stuff that can be kind of memorialized, institutional memory about yourself, so that when you go to your next fitting for the next piece of equipment that we're talking about in 2019 or 2020, you can go to the fitter and say, I know me. And maybe technology's changed, but I know me. And let's start from here. save you a lot of time. You'll probably dial in better. You're going to have a better experience as a consumer. So I guess one of my challenges for this year and one of my hopes with the equipment podcast that we do is to convince people that you need to be fit. You need to go find who you are as a golfer, what kind of shaft works for you, what kind of grip, head, all those components together, how long it should be, upright angles, flat angles, whatever it needs to be. You need to know that about yourself so that you can be a more informed golfer. Not necessarily a consumer as well, but more informed golfer. And you're going to enjoy the sport more if you go and get fit. Even if you're not buying equipment this year, go get fit. Know something about yourself. It might actually help you improve as a golfer, because if you know what your tendencies are and how equipment can help you, then maybe you can address the tendencies and then fit into equipment that's better fit for your improved game. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Next week, we're going to talk about the Sony Open in Hawaii a little bit. We're going to kick off some more European tour stuff. We're trying to have a guest, Nathan Crace, who is a golf course architect. We're trying to have him on for this week's shows. Obviously, remember, didn't do one because of my daughter's illness. But we're going to have him on to talk about some of his renovation work and what's going on in the industry in terms of that. He had jury duty this week. So hoping to get him on next week to talk about his work, his portfolio, and what's happening in broader golf with renovation and restoration, which is kind of the big move in today's architecture world, as opposed to just building new courses. There aren't that many of them coming online, maybe 20 in the next year. But a lot of golf clubs, a lot of golf courses, including some municipalities, have said, hey, you know, we need to reinvest in our golf courses. You need to renovate your house every now and then. You also need to renovate your golf course every now and then. So hopefully we have Nathan on next week, and then we're going to try and pull another guest in as well, probably a writer based around what's happening with the Sony Open in Hawaii. All right. Thanks so much for indulging me for the first 10 minutes of the show to tell you about our sponsors and all the stuff we've got going on for the year. That'll be paired back each and every week to more like a 4-minute intro instead of a 9-minute intro. And also thanks to all of our sponsors, including Shipsticks, 2-Under, Brainstorm Golf, where you can go and get 10% off of their equipment with GNN10. Forgot that. Use them. Health IQ. And we've got more to tell you about in the coming weeks as well. So you'll hear about those as well. All right. Give us a 5-star review if you have a chance. If you listen to us on iTunes, we would appreciate that. Just go to our page, our show page, search for us in the podcast app. Give us 5 stars. That's all you got to do. We would love it forever. Find us, if you are listening to us on an Android device, find us on Spotify. We're on Spotify. Make it a little bit easier for your life, because podcasting experience for people who are on Androids is not the best. But Spotify makes it a little bit easier for us, so you can find us on there as well. All right, until next week, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.